Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this program. We thank you for listening, as always, to AFR. Joining me in studio today is Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good Monday to you.
And Christopher Woodward.
Hello.
Chris, is it just me or are you donning some new glasses?
Yes, these are my, man, I spared no expense on these. I got them at the $1.25 tree. But yeah.
What are those reading glasses? Is that what they are?
They are reading glasses. I have reached that age my eyes are shot.
Do they help?
They do. It just sharpens it just a little bit. I don't need them for like
driving
everyday
or
use. Yeah,
just for reading.
It was kind of weird. Yesterday I was pulling like what I call the Chuck Schumer, where I had them on the end of my nose because I'm in church and I'm having to look down and I need these to help me read my Bible. But when I look up, the pastor's fuzzy. So it's like. I started doing one of these things.
You know, there are a lot of people. There are a lot of fuzzy pastors out there.
Yeah.
That was bad. I shouldn't say that.
And if he's listening right now, he may want to have a talk to his deacon.
I'm going to get excommunicated.
I don't think Protestant churches do that.
Voted out.
Kick you out, I think.
That's right.
I think the Catholics excommunicate you.
He's busy principaling something right now.
All right. A lot to talk about today, and we appreciate you listening. You want to watch on the internet, go to Facebook, type in Today's Issues, and we live video stream there, and we post the stories that we discuss. Also, we have our own streaming service we encourage you to take advantage of. We promise never to cancel ourselves so that you will always be able to watch American Family Radio at streaming.afa.net. Streaming.afa.net is the website, and just go there and you can watch the show and a lot of other stuff there you can take advantage of at our streaming service, streaming.afa.net. All right, Christopher, what's first story?
Well, we're watching a tropical storm by the name of Idalia. It is said to be strengthening and expected to hit Florida as a major hurricane. That's according to Fox 13, a television station there in the Tampa area. Tropical storm Idalia is gaining strength and is forecast to make a major hurricane ahead of making landfall in Florida. As of this morning around 5 a.m. Eastern, Idalia had wind speeds of 65 miles an hour. It was at 20.1 degrees longitude and 85.2 degrees latitude.
Right. I know exactly where that is.
I was going
right there, Chris. Where is that, Chris?
Well, basically, if you want to picture the state of Florida in your mind, it's going to go over the northern half of Florida just east of the panhandle. It's where it's tracked.
Yeah, right now, to get a picture, you've got Cancun, you got Cuba. It's kind of going up right in between those right now, about 90 miles west of Cuba.
Yeah.
And they say by Wednesday, the Gulf waters are historically warm
right
now. That's just what a hurricane needs to just crank up.
Right.
And now they're saying by Wednesday morning, the wind should be up to around 115 miles per hour, which makes it a Category 3 as it's coming ashore there, right where the Florida panhandle kind of and the peninsula, mm-hmm. they kind of meet there in that corner. It's going to hit around there north of Clearwater Beach in Tampa and then move across and Jacksonville on the east coast, supposed to be impacted by that, and then up the eastern coast. So Governor Ron DeSantis over the weekend, he says we're putting the people in place, getting ready for this because they are very concerned in Florida that the area I just described is going to be hit very hard.
Now, I'm looking at the map on the Weather Channel app I have on my phone of what you just described, Fred, in terms of the path of Idalia. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Idalia? I've never heard of
her. Like Vidalia without the V.
Okay. All right. Idalia. And, all right, so... If it hits there's not any population bases, so to speak, between probably Panama City and Clearwater,
mm-hmm.
around that, what they call the Big Bend in Florida. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say, you know, those people who live there are not important. I'm just saying there aren't major metropolitan areas in the path of this storm as it would come ashore. It's mm-hmm. basically desolate, that whole area. But once you, if you get ashore and then you start making your path through Jacksonville or Tallahassee and up in there, there's a lot of people that live up mm-hmm. there that will, in South Georgia
uh-huh.
and even over, I don't know how far over into South Carolina. But you know what? If you live on the coast, guess what?
Yep.
You've had hurricanes forever and you will have hurricanes forever. So that's yeah. just that's just the life that those people come to, you know, they have to live with it. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we certainly hope that you know that the damage is minimal, and there's no loss of life at mm-hmm. all. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about it is now with these you know, with the weather satellites and all the things that we have now in modern technology, you can warn people, mm-hmm. and
yes.
people can make preparation. And mm-hmm. I know that was what I watched part of the press conference yesterday from Governor DeSantis, just telling everybody what was going on. The linemen or the power company workmen are being staged,
yep.
and are getting ready to go in to, you know, restore electricity as soon as
right.
possible.
Yeah.
After, you know, because you're going to have power lines down, you're going to have you know, trees down everywhere. That's going to happen. But get ready for the climate change folks to say, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's a hurricane now that's caused by climate change. When
yes.
we've had hurricanes forever, and we'll have hurricanes as long as the, as you say, Fred, the Gulf waters are warm. And that, interestingly, this hurricane is not emanating from off the coast of Africa, where 90% of them do.
Mm-hmm.
They come off the coast of Africa, they come across the Caribbean, and then they, you know, usually strike some of the Caribbean islands, and they go either east, excuse me, they go north, or they go into the Gulf. Where this thing is formulating off the coast of Cancun and Cozumel, right?
South of there, yeah.
But
yeah.
now, is it already in the Atlantic? Is it already in the Gulf? Do we know?
I'm looking at
the northern sphere of it is
right.
in the Gulf. If you look at it, I mean, it looks pretty big right now, the way it's cranking up. That really doesn't give you a good picture. But, it, you know, it's coming across the Yucatan Peninsula and then up into the Gulf. So a wide area, I mean, what they're showing there in this picture
right.
kind of has it narrow, but there's going to be a wide area of rain
right.
that stretches out well beyond right. the path we're just talking about.
I have shared links to what we're talking about in the comments section of today's issues Facebook page, so go there for more on what we're talking about.
Interestingly enough, there's a lot of the coastal area right now from, let's say, Louisiana all the way over to Florida that is under a drought.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Allison, my wife and I, we were down there last week and went to the beach for a few days, and the grass was yellow.
Yeah,
all along Alabama, Florida, Panhandle. So mm-hmm. they usually get more rain than almost anybody in the country, and yet it's very. So I'm sure the rain will.
Some of those areas are going to appreciate this,
right? But
yeah.
nobody wants to get into drought by a hurricane, right?
No.
But anyway, we will watch and see what happens there. Next story, Chris.
Well, you mentioned how this, you know, people and politicians will blame this on climate change.
Right.
That is something we've heard about the Hawaii fires, and I wanted to take a moment to mention that because, as we heard from people and politicians, most of them liberals, in the days immediately following the Hawaii fires, we heard how it was caused by man-made climate change. Humans burning fossil fuels are to blame for Hawaii and these fires, or these fires in Hawaii. There is a story out today, and here's just one example. I'll share the link on our Facebook page. It's now been determined by some that bare power lines and obsolete poles were the possible cause of Hawaii fires, not our use of fossil fuels. This probably won't get a lot of time and attention on CNN and MSNBC because they, like a lot of the liberals, have been beating the drum saying humans are to blame for these fires. And in fact, they are, but not in the way that liberals wanted people to believe.
Brad?
Yeah, pardon me, and here's what happened. You had these old power lines that were there. We had storm system. You had a hurricane that was going across the bottom. You had a high pressure system to the north of the Hawaiian Islands. So you had a lot of wind. And then these power lines that were in poor shape, apparently, were brought down. They hadn't shut down the power, so there's electricity flowing through there. It hits the grass, the dry grass, and the trees, and it kicks up the firestorm that we saw in that. So lawsuits are flying against the power company there in Hawaii already. But here in the mainland, the United States, you have the climate changers already saying it's all about climate change. This is what caused this. You're going to hear this a lot, folks. Every weather system that they can, they blame on climate change. And it just adds, and this is global. I was watching something this morning in Europe during the weekend. These climate change people were out spraying yachts. They say yachts, people should not own yachts. They shouldn't have private airplanes because they are heating up the environment. These climate change people, they are radical in their thinking. And they're out there and they're part of the Biden administration. And it's being used. Climate change is going to be used for more and more control of people's lives. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's the attempt. That's what they're going to want to do here.
That's the agenda.
Is to control, especially these climate change activists who blame man for, quote, climate change. Their end goal is to control the American economy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the name of safety,
yes.
In the name of keeping these natural disasters from happening. And this was a natural disaster. By that, I mean fire, right?
Uh-huh.
But as you say, Chris, and what you're pointing out, Fred, these electric poles, what they're saying in Maui.
Maui.
Uh-huh. Were old. They fell down. And then so you had infrastructure that was too old, should have been updated years ago, and that's been known in Maui for a long time. Plus, as you say, they didn't cut off
the power. Raw wires.
And these winds.
Yes.
So
it was the, as they say, the perfect storm, combination of factors.
Yeah. All right, Chris.
In other news, we have this on our website, afn.net. A new poll from the Associated Press and NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds much of the public united in sizing up the one trait Joe Biden cannot change, his age. In a new poll, 77% said Biden is too old to be effective for 4 more years. Not only do 89% of Republicans say that, so do 69% of Democrats.
How old is he?
He's 80 years old now. I looked him up the other day. I'm going to find out when his birthday is.
So the surprise to you, Chris, was that so many Democrats said he's too old to be president?
Yeah, this is the same guy who just put out videos a few months ago saying, help me finish the job. Apparently 69% of his own party doesn't want to help him do that because he's too
old.
Well,
they see what we see. I mean, you know, he's, you know, age is catching up with him and both physically, although he's, you know, other than the shuffling around and the occasional fall, which I think too much has been made of the balls. He's had, what has he had? Two or three?
Three or four, yeah.
Three or four spills there. Well, I could have that in a week. You know what I'm saying?
And the thing is, we got to be careful about this. There are folks who are 85 years old that are just fine.
Oh, sure.
I think when you're talking about Joe Biden, you're talking about a man that has now early stages of probably dementia.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big concern.
Yeah.
You know,
the mental part.
Is a mental capacity.
Yeah.
And we have seen him in his speeches, and just repeating things that everybody says, wow, where'd you get that? That's
right.
Not true. That's what people are really concerned about. And we talked a little bit about this last week. I think there are meetings being held behind closed doors, Democrats, they are meeting, and they understand. They're going to look at this poll this morning, and they're saying, aha, this is more evidence that Joe Biden cannot be on the top of the ticket. They've got to make a decision before Christmas. They really do.
Yeah.
And in Ed's absence today, I will say there's now three stories out there that I've seen. New York Times.
Are you about to go with what You about to go with what I think you're going to go with?
I hope so, because I just shared a link.
You going to suggest? Okay, go ahead. That'll leave it for me, because I usually slap Ed down on this one.
In Ed's absence.
Okay, I'm ready, Fred.
Michelle
Obama.
Hit
it over to me.
Michelle Obama.
Uh-huh.
Never heard of her.
Michelle Obama, okay. What about her?
Top of the ticket.
Okay.
All right. That's what some people say.
Okay. Well.
If not Joe, who?
Well, okay. you know what? I've been wrong a few times, but I don't think I'm going to be wrong on this one. Michelle Obama is not going to be the Democrat nominee for president because she doesn't want to be. Okay? I'm not saying she wouldn't be a better name presentation on the ballot than Biden, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know that for sure. She has no qualifications in terms of her history of certainly becoming president of the United States. But she does the name recognition, mm-hmm. and first ladies of all stripes are generally liked by the public. So I don't disagree with that. But man, as I've said before, Michelle Obama, she's got homes in Hawaii, and is it Martha's Vineyard?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, for tax and spend liberals, mm-hmm. they're killing it in the free enterprise system. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
And then she vacations in Europe. With George Clooney, and listen, she's living the high life, man. Why do you want to go back to be chained back to the White House?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. I just don't see it at all. But anyway,
well, if not Michelle Obama, then is you know I think Gavin Newsom wants it.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any question about that. I think there is this. I think he's already cranking up his campaign in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, to go back where we started here, I think within the Democrat Party family,
sure,
they understand that Joe Biden's condition is not going to improve. And
right.
now, and we keep getting these polls, and this is just the latest one, folks. Keep in mind, 69%, this is an AP NORC poll, fairly credible. 77% of all Americans say he shouldn't have a second term, but 69% of that's 7 out of 10 Democrats.
Now, wait a minute. Say he shouldn't have a second term or say he's too old?
They say he shouldn't have a second term because he's too old.
Correct. Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you got Kamala Harris as VP. Nobody's talking about her.
Oh.
Why couldn't he step aside and she be the candidate?
I'm going back to Canada, folks. I'm sorry if that woman.
No, listen. I agree. She's not a part of the conversation because she would be a worse candidate than Biden, probably.
Yes.
As far as being the top of the ticket, but I do agree with you. Something's going on in the background. I'm thinking the Democrats will try to replace him. Although I don't know exactly how you do that if, in fact, he wants to stay on top of the ticket. You know, you have to do an intervention, right?
Yeah.
The Democrat bigwigs, whoever they may be, would have to go in and say, listen, Joe and Kamala,
right.
Kamala,
yeah.
we're going to replace you guys at the top of the ticket.
But you know what? I think Barack Obama, Rahm Emanuel,
right.
a few others, they sit
down.
Well,
his wife. Jill Biden should say, that's it. After this term's over, we're going to the house.
Yes.
And our beach house.
Yeah.
And whatever other houses Hunter's bought for us that we don't know about.
Yes.
we're going to enjoy the last.
Thanks to some Romanian businessman.
We're
going to
enjoy our 80s here, and we're not going to be in the White House.
Yeah.
That's what a wife in this situation should do.
I looked it up. Michelle Obama is only 59 years old, and if you're living the lifestyle that she's living right now and you don't need to work anymore, I wouldn't bother.
Okay, I'll tell you a scenario, and this is out there, okay? And I realize that what I'm about to describe is out there. But since we're – okay, so Michelle Obama accepts what you're talking about, Fred, and Ed would – he would, like, be every day saying, I told you so to me. And my office is near his, so he'd be unbearable. But he would be telling me every day, "I told you so." Who's the candidate, Tim? Uh huh. And who told you that? Anyway, I think you might be able to draft Michelle Obama to run for president.
Mm-hmm.
But under the condition that once she's elected, she resigns and gives it to whoever her VP is. You see what I'm saying?
In this bizarro world we live in, nothing.
Why couldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why couldn't you do that? You just run. You win, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, or predictably. If that would be the thinking of the Democrats. She can win. She wins. Then she resigns. And then she hands it off to whoever the VP that she selected is. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just saying that's wild and crazy. You're going to have to pay Kamala Harris, the VP, a lot of money. You're going to have to buy her off and able to get her out of the way. I mean, they're going to have to say, listen, we got $20 million for you right here.
Which if Biden's economy is not much.
Yeah. I personally don't. She doesn't strike me as the kind of person that even wants to be president, Kamala Harris. That's just the vibe I get hearing her. I don't think she could handle it. And I don't think she'd be elected. But anyway, we'll see what happens there. Keep in mind that former President Trump is 77.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. His birthday is June 14th.
He's going to be 78 next June.
It's interesting. This AP North poll, which is on our website, afn.net, goes beyond the question of president. It talks about there should be term limits for Supreme Court justices. There should
Who's saying that?
This is the AP North poll.
Yeah.
Oh, the same poll you just cited about Biden being too old.
And they're also talking about term limits or age limits for lawmakers,
so
senators.
So this poll, well, you have to change the Constitution now. That's, you know, that can be done. But in terms of what is it, term limits on Supreme Court justices or age limits on Supreme Court justices?
Retired by a certain age.
Specifically, 67% of those polled favor requiring Supreme Court justices to retire by a certain age. 68% support age ceilings for candidates for House and Senate, and 66% support age ceilings for candidates for president. So there's an age thing going on here.
I see a potential negative here. I know there are people on the right that are open to having a conversation about age limits or term limits for a Supreme Court justice, but this could only politicize our elections that much more. Because, you know, say you have Justice X coming up near retirement age, put me in and I'll replace him or her with the right kind of person. And that's why people vote. It's not the economy. It's not national security. It's to get somebody replaced on the court, which some people already vote that way, which is their choice.
Well, the lifetime expectancy when this rule was put into place, is this a constitutional? Sorry, I don't know. I'm talking about Supreme Court justices having lifetime appointments. I'm assuming that's in the Constitution.
Well, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then you'd have to change the Constitution, right, to be able to accomplish that. But, of course, the reason that federal judges, including Supreme Court justices, have lifetime appointments is to free them of political influence.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is a wise thing. I think that was the wisdom of our founding fathers. Now, the age, the life expectancy, and the time that this was passed or became law, the law of the land, was probably 45.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Here lies John. He lived a good life. He was 48.
He was 48. Yeah. So I mean, I don't think the founding fathers could have, in any way, thought, well, you know, these guys will live to be 80 plus and be on the Supreme Court. All right, we're going to take a short time out right here, and we have a guest coming up, James Lambert, in just a couple of minutes, and he's got some stories that we're going to let him tell about some very well-known celebrities that especially baby boomers will recognize who came to know Jesus as their Savior and how that happened. We'll be back after this short timeout. Stay with us.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Words are wonderful things. They help us in expressing our appreciation to God for all that He's done for us. They help us in expressing our love for other people. They help us in sharing with others wonderful truths which we have found in life. They even provide a medium by which we can share a moving story. I'd like to use some words to do that, to share a moving story. It's such a simple story. Perhaps that's the best kind of story, you know, a simple one, because most of us can understand a simple story. One day a man was walking down the street. He ran into a boy who had two birds in a cage. The man asked the boy about the birds. "Where did you get those two beautiful birds?" The boy was quick to reply, "I set a trap and captured them." "What do you plan to do with the birds?" the man asked. "Well, I'm going to take them home and feed them to my cat," the boy replied. The man looked at the two lovely but helpless birds. He thought about the beautiful music the birds could bring if they were free. He thought about other birds who loved those two birds in the cage and how the other birds would miss their friendship. He thought about freedom and how much he himself loved freedom. "How much will you take for the cage and the birds?" the man asked the boy. "You must be kidding," the boy said. "What would anyone want with two worthless birds?" Again the man asked, "How much do you want for the cage and the birds?" The boy saw the determined look on the face of the man. "How much money do you have?" he asked the man. "Son, I only have $2, came the reply. There was a moment of silence, and then the boy replied, "I'll take $2 for the birds." The man reached down into his pocket, took out the $2. He gave them to the boy. The boy handed the man the cage and the two birds. As he walked away, he made this statement, "Stupid man to give his last $2 for a pair of worthless birds." The man turned and opened the cage. His heart sang with gladness as he let the birds go free. And everyone he met walking down the street wondered about the expression of joy and happiness on the man's face. They all wondered why he carried an empty bird cage. Now, what's the relation between the story and us? Simply this. We're like the birds in the cage. The devil baited his trap with the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. He had man in his grip, and his only desire was to destroy him. But God's heart was full of hurt because it was his desire that man should be free. So he asked the devil what he'd take for those who were caught in the cage of sin. The devil at first thought God was kidding. He could not understand why God would want a free, worthless man. The devil finally decided to make a joke and say to God that he would let man go, but only at the expense of God's son. But to the surprise of the devil, God agreed to give his son. This he did at Calvary. And now those who desire can walk out of the cage of sin and into the freedom of life eternal. Words are wonderful things, aren't they?
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Be silent before me so that I may speak. Then let come upon me what may. Why should I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hands? Though he slay me, I will hope in him. Job 13:13-15.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at this address, comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. We prefer what we call K-Love emails here. That is to say, we want them positive and encouraging. So comments@afr.net is the email address. We take constructive criticism. We just don't take it very well. You know what I'm saying? All right, so Fred Jackson with me, Tim Wildman, and Chris Woodward, our newsman. And Ed's out today. Ray's out today. And Is Ray going to be on tomorrow? Ray Pritchard? We don't know. We'll find out. All right. So in studio with us now is James Lambert. James is from San Diego area, longtime friend of mine and our ministry. And good morning to you, Brother James.
Morning. Thank you very much for having me, Tim.
San Diego, that's where you were born and raised, right?
Yeah, I was born in La Jolla, California, which is on the coast.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there watching the surfers.
Yeah, that's what I used to do.
Is that what you did?
Yeah.
You surfed out there?
Yeah, I learned to surf when my
parents... There's some rocks out there that you can hit if you're not careful, right?
Well, it depends. If you went to wind and sea, that's true. But if you go down the shores, there aren't any rocks.
Okay. Well, I don't surf. And there's a reason for that. Anyway, so welcome to Mississippi.
Thank you very much.
God How'd you get here?
I got here by plane from Memphis to Memphis.
Okay.
Yeah,
you went San Diego to Memphis, Memphis to Tupelo?
Well, actually, no, I took the car down from Memphis to Tupelo.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm talking about San Diego to Memphis.
Oh, yeah, I flew.
Direct?
No, it was indirect. There was I had to go to
I got more questions
Houston.
On this. I'm a lawyer.
Houston.
I'm a pretend lawyer. So I'm going to interrogate you on how you got here, how long you waited in the airport, and all that stuff.
Fortunately, a lot of people should take advantage of it, but a lot of credit card companies they give you free mileage, you know, when you fly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how I get around a lot.
Hey, but that tropical storm that hit San Diego, that affect you at all?
It wasn't that bad in San Diego. It rained a lot.
Right.
2 days of rain, very intense rain. But as far as the wind and everything, that was primarily in Mexico and east of San Diego.
Yeah.
But it was primarily in the Baja area. But it was a lot of rain.
All right. What's your profession there?
I was previously a bank. I worked in bank management for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I graduated from college and ultimately got my MBA, and I actually taught for 3 years in college in the evenings and worked during the day and as a branch manager. And then ultimately I worked in the big loan department for First Interstate Bank. And then after I left First Interstate, I started my own mortgage company.
Right.
And did that for almost 10 years.
Right. Well, listen, you've written a book. You've written a couple. What was the name of your first book?
Porn in America, which your father
this was back in the 80s, right?
Yeah. No, it was 98.
Yeah, but it was about the problem of pornography and how it was impacting people's lives and such.
Right, and from that book, I got 3 death threats.
Yeah.
And one gentleman.
Why?
Because of the book. The LA Times actually closed their porn advertising for a number of months, for several months, because of the book. And I was on the O'Reilly Factor twice.
Why did you call Pete? I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, we actually shut down some porn shops.
Gotcha.
And it was because of zoning regulations. I was familiar with zoning regulations. But more than
you mean
that,
like strip joints and places like that?
Yeah, yeah, okay. That type of places. And adult bookstores.
Gotcha.
Type. And then, what happened is, I think the advertising thing is had a lot to do with it. But one of the threats I got was by phone, and the other one was by a letter. And then somebody went to my father's house, and my father, being an ex-World War II veteran, pulled out a bayonet that he had. And he said, if you come back here, you're going to see this.
Wow.
And they left. And but the main thing is people didn't understand. I also, besides O'Reilly Factor, I got on all 3 major networks. And what happened is I just was alerting people to the dangers of excessive pornography,
right,
especially kiddie porn. Which is, at that time, there were over 70,000 kiddie porn sites on the internet.
At that time?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You've written two more books.
Yeah. My first one was 16 Amazing Stories of Divine Intervention. And then this one I just came out with in the last 7 months.
Okay. For sake of time here, we need to move along to the contents of this particular book.
Right.
But You need to give a 2-minute how you came to know Christ, because that changed your whole life.
Definitely.
So when did that happen? How did that happen?
That happened in February of 71. A guy came in my room. I had 3 months prior had an accident that depressed me, a car accident where I fell asleep at night. I was driving down to Santa Cruz in a van with my future wife. And I fell asleep at the wheel, and I hit the side of the railings, and I should have lost my leg, but it was miraculous I didn't. So I was sort of depressed the next few months.
Were you in college at the time? Or
I was in college. This was during Thanksgiving weekend, so I drove down there.
In 71?
Yes.
Okay.
This was the Thanksgiving of 70. Mm-hmm. So the next few months, I was sort of depressed. Anyway, a friend of mine came into my room one night, knocked on the door, and shared the four spiritual laws with me.
Hmm. Talking about Campus Crusade for Christ, Bill Bright.
Right.
Track that went around that had millions of
millions,
people.
Millions, yes. Yeah. And in fact, Bill Bright's autobiography, or not autobiography, but biography's in my book too. But yeah, anyway, he shared it, and God totally opened my eyes to the reality of the dear Lord and Savior. And I accepted him, and it totally changed my life overnight. Mm. And that's what changed my life for the better. And after that, I went to, after I graduated from college, I went to Christ for Our Nations for a year just to get solidified in the word and stuff. And then since I had experience when I was in high school, I went to, I worked in the late afternoons at a bank, and I enjoyed it because I was sort of a finance guy. And so what happened is I got a job in the banking industry as a operations supervisor initially, and then I worked my way up into management and eventually got to do very large loans. There were 10 of us that managed over approximately $1 billion in loans. Oh. So we did very large loans.
You've done over $1 billion in loans?
No. Our department did.
Oh, I got you.
Our average loan was just a couple million, $2 or $3 million. The largest one I was involved in was like $25 million.
Wow.
But anyway, so I was involved in that. And after I retired from the banking industry, I saw friends that were doing very well in the mortgage business. So I started on my own mortgage company.
Gotcha, and did very well there, too. Now, this book is called More Amazing Stories of Divine Intervention. We're going to tell how can people read about this or buy this book?
They can go to barnesandnoble.com and just type in the name of the book.
More Amazing Stories of Divine Intervention by James Lambert. Now, this is you've done a lot of research on celebrities that people would be aware of, especially people, you know, I guess 50 and older would have heard these names. And that's that. So your book is like chapter after chapter after chapter about people like Rock Hudson, Mickey Rooney,
Dwight Eisenhower.
Dwight Eisenhower. Did he do much with his life?
Yes.
Somebody Dwight Eisenhower. I've heard that name.
Yeah, he was very dedicated.
Is Dwight Eisenhower in this book?
Yes.
All right. Tell me about it. Dwight Eisenhower. Of course, I'm kidding. He was the general during the World War II.
Right. The invasion of Normandy.
Yeah. He was over the and then he went on obviously to become president of the United States. Eisenhower. So you got a story about him in this book. Just one of the people you talk about. Tell us that story.
Yeah. Dwight. Interestingly enough, his mother was a believer, and instead of gravitating towards that, he had interest in the military, and he would read military type books.
He grew up in Missouri or Kansas or which?
Kansas, I believe.
Kansas.
Yeah,
he's a Kansas. It's Truman that's from Missouri.
But anyway, all I know is he became interested in the military, and he got obsessed with it eventually. So he would end up going to West Point, and he excelled in the military as far as making decisions and strategies and all that. to the point where he would advance from, you know, colonel to general to, you know, eventually a four-star general. And he became associated. He worked in the Philippines for a short period of time. And then eventually they recognized his skill of organizing and also developing strategy. War strategy was very important. And that's why they assigned him to be in charge of the Normandy invasion. So what really changed his life, though, is when he was involved in the war against Nazi Germany and he saw what was really behind and what was involved in the state of Russia or the Soviet Union. They were an atheistic country. They were pushing communism. And it was totally contrary to what he thought America was all about. And the difference between the two countries gravitated him towards a relationship with God, because he realized that God was all what it was all about ultimately. So when he gave his inauguration speech, he dedicated a lot of his life to God. And in fact, he even got to be a close friend of Billy Graham, and he would call Billy Graham America's minister. And he would have him come over every few a year or two and be a part of the White House. So they became good friends. And he also was responsible for putting in God You Trust in the coinage.
Okay.
So his is just one of many
stories. Yeah, your chapter one's all about the life of Dwight D. Eisenhower. Yeah. Go ahead, Fred. Were you going to ask him about?
Yeah, there's some famous names I think that a lot of people would recognize. Like, now, Rock Hudson, I was a little surprised. I had to admit this morning when you talked to our staff at Devotion. The last we heard of Rock Hudson, he was discovered, he was involved with a homosexual lifestyle.
Right.
But you tell in this book the story about him getting saved.
Let me just say this. For those who are too young, Rock Hudson would have been Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Okay, of the middle 20th century. Okay, he was a big name, big star, right? That's who we're talking about. Right. Anyway, just wanted to give context for the 50 under crowd who don't.
That's a good comparison.
Go ahead.
Yeah. In fact, it was so bad as far as hiding his homosexual tendencies that his first marriage was sort of, it was implied that it was sort of set up to show that he had a traditional relationship. But obviously that wasn't the case. And during a number of those years, regardless of, you know, the shows, TV shows and or movies he was in, he was homosexual. And in fact, he was the first well-known celebrity that declared himself having HIV.
I remember that.
Now, during the early years in the late 70s, they had studio dressing rooms in Hollywood, and that's how he met Pat Boone. So they were acquaintances. They weren't close friends at all, but they were acquaintances, and they knew each other because they also lived fairly close to each other in Beverly Hills. So Pat would at least have a relationship by knowing him. And when he found out he was sick, he contacted him and reached out to him and prayed for him. But the reason that he did that is because two ladies that were nurses were actually attended his wife's wife would have Bible studies periodically. They told him that he was open to the Lord.
Whose wife would have Bible studies regularly? You're talking about
Pat Boone's wife.
Yes, yeah. Shirley, I think.
Right. And these two nurses told him about the fact that he's dying because of his HIV. So he visited him.
Pat Boone did. Yeah.
Yes, Pat Boone, and he prayed for him. But there was, besides these two nurses, there was a minister that went there too and prayed for him, and he accepted the Lord just about 48 hours before he died.
That's, that story is just one of the. So Dwight Eisenhower, Rock Hudson. And so this book is called More Amazing Stories of Divine Intervention.
And Mickey Rooney's.
Mickey Rooney's stories in here.
Right. And do you remember Ann Davis from the Brady Bunch?
Yeah, the maid.
Yeah. Mm. She was single her whole life. And besides that, she got to the point she was successful in her career. She did a lot of television and related movies. But what happened is she started wondering about, well, what's life all about? She started questioning the whole thing. And that's why she got eventually committed herself to Christ. In fact, she was the last few years of her life, she would live in a Episcopal community with older people. Mm-hmm. And that's, and then she would go around the country in Episcopal churches and share God, mm-hmm. Which a lot of people aren't aware of. She would share her testimony.
Now, and you do that too, right? You travel the country. That's one of the reasons you're
in this state.
You're yeah. in the South.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Exactly.
What, you flew out from California to...
to wacky left coast.
There are 8 or 9 other Christians in California, right, besides you?
No, there's a lot.
I'm kidding.
There
I'm
are
kidding.
Some churches.
I'm
no,
kidding.
I know.
I'm kidding.
But, no, it's sad when you go into church. I've spoken in a lot of churches, and it's sad when you go into a lot of churches, in, at least in my state, and you see the population is 50-plus. You don't see a lot of young
right.
kids.
Right.
And that's why... After experiencing a revival at my college, Linfield College in Oregon, which is now called Linfield University, it saddens me to know that they don't have very many Christians there anymore like they used to. And I feel like a lot of these young kids don't know the basic gospel message, and that's why it's so important to share that. And I use these little comics that you've probably seen before.
Chick Tracks, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Chick Tracks.
Yeah, I knew Jack. In fact, one of the people in my last book.
So you go to, excuse me for interrupting you, just so people know, you travel the country.
Right.
And at your own expense, and you go oftentimes by yourself.
Right.
To a college or university campus.
Right.
And you go to where they might have a public area,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the food court, usually.
A food court, and you, then what do you do?
Well, I have signage that I put out.
Okay.
Including some websites and some other stuff.
What does the sign say?
It says, Christ came for you, follow him.
Right.
Another one is, life is short, heaven is forever.
Right.
And then, you know.
So these college kids scriptures. Didn't come up, the college kids didn't come up and
well, I would actually approach them, and I said, God loves you. This is about God's love.
Did you give them a track?
Yeah, right. And then I would talk to them a little bit if they want to talk. If they're in a hurry, they don't. But
how many people have you seen? How they generally speaking? How are you received?
It depends on the location of the college. Some colleges the kids are more not interested, but there's a number of colleges where they are. So it all depends on the college itself. Hmm. But for the most part, there is a percentage that are interested in the Lord. So,
and they'll stop and talk to you, or at
yeah,
least
they talk to me.
They're not rude.
They talk to me, but a lot of them are, you know, have to go to classes.
Yeah,
so
sure.
All I could do is
hand
just
them
give
track.
Them the track. Yeah. And the track itself is priceless because it talks about the full gospel message. And
so how many college campuses have you been to?
Over 80.
Over 80.
Yeah.
You just go by yourself.
Yeah, still by myself, and I pass out. I passed out, like I said, over 39,000 tracts over the last seven
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And what I do is the ones that are open, I talk to them extensively. And on some occasion, just recently, I was in a homeless area, and a guy accepted the Lord. So I mean. It does happen. It just doesn't happen as much as you'd like.
Yeah. Talking to James Lambert, he's from San Diego, California, longtime friend of our ministry. He happens to be in Tupelo today. He's going to Alabama and Mississippi to several campuses
yeah.
to do just what I described or what he described. And his book is called, his third book is called More Amazing Stories of Divine Intervention. And you can buy that at barnesandnoble.com. Is that
yeah,
right? barnesandnoble.com. So, but I guess you get a few folks who are, do they want to challenge you on the validity of Christianity, or they just want to?
Yeah, there's some that get upset, you know.
Why are they upset?
And they use the F-bomb. Mm-hmm. Probably because they're atheistic, or I mean that does happen.
They get angry at the God who doesn't exist.
Yeah,
that's what Frank Turek says. They're mad at God,
mm-hmm.
but then they say, but God doesn't exist. They just, huh?
But you know, God can do anything, and I just look at it in the terms of God can take care of things. Like, there was a time not that long ago where the Lord spoke to me, and I had three old friends that I had, one from college, one from, and two from my high school and middle school years. The Lord told me to go to their house, and all three of them accepted the Lord. So, I mean, God can do anything. You know, God can speak to your heart. But the main thing that the book encourages you is, if you're a believer especially, it's a good way of sharing your faith with friends and relatives.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us forget that there's people close to us that don't know the Lord, and they need to hear the good news. And, you know, especially with the way things are going in this country right now, it's very important.
Yeah. What is your website?
James,
do you have one, or Facebook? Or do you?
Yeah, I have one that's it's James L. Lambert, LAMBERT.com. And if you go on the website, there'll be a section that says book, and then you can find the book there too. So, and also it talks about my past and my testimony.
Yeah,
I shared a link for you on our page.
And I'm really thankful to Rusty Benson for doing my testimony back in 2014.
Rusty retired, but he worked here for years as assistant editor for our magazine. That's how we put your story in there, and then it gave it a lot of exposure. Well, listen, Brother James, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
And wish you the best. And you're going to...
Could I give you my 800 number?
Yeah, what's it for?
Yeah, if people want to get the book, they can call me directly.
Do you answer the phone?
No, they just leave their name on it.
It's an 800 number that they leave their name, and you, what, then
and
what?
I call them back, and they want to order the book.
Okay.
It's an easy way to get in touch with me.
Okay, what's the number?
If you want to post it, it's 800
mm-hmm.
656.
Not 666.
No.
Okay.
656 8603.
800-656-8603.
Yeah, and if they go to that number and leave me a message, I'll call them
fairly
shortly, and we can talk. And if they're interested in the book, like I said, it's a great
way. Where are you going in Mississippi and Alabama while you're here?
I'm going to Mississippi State and University of Mississippi, and then Auburn, and then
Alabama
and Alabama State.
You need my cowbell.
You what?
You need my cowbell.
I'll show you.
I'll show you.
Have to explain that to him off the air. Okay.
Call me.
All right. So anyway, we wish you the best. We'll pray for you, Brother James. Thanks for coming by and sharing. All right. So we're going to take a short time out. We'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues.